We have three items left. They are reports from the Archives Director, Brian DeShazer, the Affiliates Director, Ursula Rudenberg, and the Webmaster, Pete Caracas. The first two are slated to be 20 minutes. Pete has agreed to do his in 10. If the other two can, just go ahead, Brian, it's 20 minutes.
20 minutes.
For the report. Or less, 20 or less.
Otis? Yeah, let's start with that, if you will.
Hard to be funny when, you know, what's going down at Attica, you know, really upsets me.
Richard Phelps?
And, you know, people talking about it, and I'm kind of uptight to talk about it or say anything that I really feel about it. Hard to be funny when, you know, what's going down at Attica, you know, really upsets me. Hard to be funny when, you know, what's went down at Attica, you know, really upsets me. And, you know, a lot of people talking about it, and I'm kind of uptight to talk about it or say anything that I really feel about it. But I have understanding, you know. What I dislike very much is that they're trying to insult our intelligence by trying to make us think we ought to do something about it, or that they think they are going to do something about it, which is absolutely nothing. They're doing a number, you know, on the news that, you know, they told a lie, now they, you know, they got to deal with it. Because I know every nigga knows what happens, that people don't really care about it.
Richard Pryor discussing Attica in 1971. The Pacifica Radio Archives celebrates Black History Month all this February. To see what other invaluable recordings we have in our collection, go to PacificaRadioArchives.org.
Oh. See, it was on. Okay, so that was Richard Pryor, 1971, from the Pacifica Radio Archives, that is now has been digitized and is being broadcast throughout the network for the month of February. On AudioPort, we have five other Black History Month PSAs that are being distributed already. Over 9 or 10 affiliates have downloaded all of those PSAs to be broadcast. The point is, with that audio, is that it would never have been able to be possible to do that unless the back work had been done by the Pacific Radio Archives staff of identifying the program through grants, through grant money advisory panel, selecting materials to be digitized, and doing the work. So I'd like to honor the Pacific Radio Archives staff of only 6 people, visually, it's you, to do all this work. So thanks to the Pacific Radio Archives staff. I also would like to mention, coming from the last board meeting, we're talking about our fund drive day, which we did achieve over $126,000, over $53,000 short of our goal. But I do feel that we were successful in our efforts, because we're still building. It was only the start of a year-long process of trying to get to that goal. I'd like to thank Mitch Jezerich, who's in the room, who interviewed Helen Thomas for our War and Peace documentary. Thank you, Mitch, if he's still here. Fulfillment of whoever pledged. So the rate of fulfillment is really incredible. And that's, I think that every single year we are between 95 and 98% fulfillment. Also I'd like to say that December 6th was our fund drive day. We had over 1,025 pledgers. Premiums were delivered in their entirety by Christmas. Again, honoring the work of the Pacifica Radio Archives staff, Edward Toledo, and the volunteers who helped duplicate all those materials and get them out in the mail for the holiday season. So I'd like to, again, honor the staff. So we're talking about the back work of what happens. How do we get these materials accessible to the public? How do we let Richard Pryor and Fannie Lou Hamer be heard and studied and understood? And it is through the work of archiving the discipline of archiving. You know, I've heard the word of archiving being thrown around for the websites. Please understand that the word archive is a specific discipline, and it just does not apply to digital storage on websites. So I'd appreciate it if you all would understand what kind of language you're using when you're talking about archiving on the internet. So grants. We just applied for a new Grammy Foundation grant. We're about to apply for a new NEA grant. So we're still continuing our work on finding funds to select and digitize and make accessible the materials in the archive. In your board packs is a 23-page report from the Pacifica Radio Archives. What this was is the final report of the grant process of all selecting 240 materials to be digitized and properly preserved. The 23-page report is out of order. I noticed in the board pack it starts with a transcription of a Lena Horne interview, then goes to a bunch of other stuff, so please be aware that it's not in order, and I apologize how that was bound together. But what it does represent is listing you the 240 materials, or I think it's 125 on that list, of what's been preserved and how significant those recordings are to the history of this foundation. You, the board of directors, have the charge that was presented by the board in 1971 to take care of the legacy of the Pacifica Radio Foundation. I heard in the past few days Rosalinda speak about Dorothy Healy. Don White talked about the inspiration of the HUAC recordings. You talked about Rob Robinson talked about Allen Ginsberg Howe, and Steve Pierce talked about Edward Teller and Linus Pauling. Good memory, eh? What it means is that those four recordings do live in the archive only by a miracle. And the miracle is still happening, but we need your help. We need you to understand the archives committee that was presented, and you passed the motion, and I appreciate it. But I think the spirit of the archives committee is that we're charging you, the committee, the task force, is charging you, the board, to understand that it's not a simple thing that you can just, it's a committee today, it's a task force tomorrow, and we may help and we may not. This charge is serious. We have the biggest problem in the foundation, in my opinion. We have the legacy of inspiration that inspired you four people to name those recordings. The legacy of inspiration must be continued, and we have to understand that we have to put more energies and resources into the archives. Six people cannot do this work, ladies and gentlemen. The money that we have coming through our one-day fund drive that we didn't meet, using affiliate money that Ursula and the affiliate program needs to do the affiliate work, the model that's made up in their funding right now is only a sort of ad hoc, it was sort of a temporary fix when Leslie and Dan came in. It's time to sort of revision that, and I look forward to working with Lonnie and Greg and Ursula to re-envision how the money flows and how the archives can be taken care of, how the affiliate program can be taken care of, because those two programs are the most incredible things that have happened in the past 3 years. The affiliates program has been set up and been taken care of and fostered by Ursula, and that has allowed the Pacifica Radio Archives to distribute and have the voices of the legacy of inspiration throughout the nation. Ambrose Lane, you asked if he's gone national. The Pacifica Radio Archives took Mr. Lane national, both on our Archives Fund Drive Day and for Martin Luther King Day, when we distributed over 8 hours of Martin Luther King's speeches to the network. Mr. Lane's voice and Martin Luther King Jr.'s voice was heard in Atlanta, Alaska, Boulder, Colorado, and the five Pacifica stations. If that had not happened, it's a miracle that that happened. Of the 8 hours, we have over three of the Martin Luther King speeches are unique to Pacifica. They don't exist anywhere else. What are you going to do about it? Are you going to give us the energies and resources to do this work? I'd like to commend Pete Caracas' work on AudioPort. That has been the hub that has allowed us to distribute the materials to the affiliates and let them access our material and broadcast it. The Martin Luther King Day material, Pete helped us figure out how to get it on AudioPort so that we could know before people downloaded it who was going to take it and how it was going to be broadcast, because copyright restrictions. Martin Luther King is not allowed to be downloaded, streamed, sold, premiumed. We're not here to exploit anybody in the archives. We're here to make it accessible, make available for research so that people can understand what the dialogue and the history of this foundation has been. I'm happy and proud to say that at the NFCB conference in April, we've just been approved by the Youth Radio Conference Steering Committee that the Archives is going to do a workshop taking the mystery out of history, understanding how to use archiving the archives as a resource, not only for radio, but for education. There's plenty to say. I'd like to say that, I just lost it. The materials, Rosa Parks, Muhammad Ali, the materials documenting the march from Selma to Montgomery. Those materials now live. January 16th, the Ford Museum in Dearborn, Michigan opened the Rosa Parks bus exhibit. The actual bus is there. What do you hear when children and visitors go through the bus and file through it? They hear the Pacifica Radio Archives interview with Rosa Parks from 1956. The Muhammad Ali Center now has materials and part of an audio presentation. And the National Park Service historic site documenting the march from Montgomery to Selma now has materials as an audio presentation. So again, it's through the work of the back work of archiving, the discipline of archiving that has allowed us to take these materials and put them in the places where they can have an impact. Can you imagine the children that hear Rosa Parks' voice from 1956? How that can impact and inspire like you've been inspired? What are you going to do about the Pacifica Radio Archives? I think I'm done for the moment. I'm not. I'm not. We've heard a lot about an Archives National Program. It's been proposed by Rob Robinson. It's been discussed many times, and I've always said, we're there to do it. We need money. Six people cannot do archiving, premium production, development, publicity, and all that we're trying to do. So we have a proposal that we have drafted that we'd like to present at some point to the right committee or the right structure to allow the Pacific Radio Archives to be broadcast regularly on a regular basis nationally so that we can continue our identifying how important these materials are, not only to Pacifica, but to the nation and the world, frankly. So now I'm done. Questions and whatever.
Go ahead, Bob.
Who was?
Don. Okay, go ahead, Don.
Okay, I'm going to make this quick. I do want to say, every time I hear you speak, I don't hear a passion for the archives. I hear real love for them. I mean, it comes through. I want to tell you that right after the programming on Martin Luther King Day, I got a call from O'Neill Cannon at the Paul Robeson Center. And he said, Don, I've got to get a hold of the archives and get what was on the air. The Paul Robeson Center in Los Angeles, which we work closely with, wanted to immediately get stuff that you broadcast that he didn't have. Here's my question. I'm joining the archives committee of this board. And if you could write a one-point agenda for our first meeting, what would you have that one point on our first meeting be?
The Archives Committee meeting?
Uh-huh. Of the National Board. Money?
Money.
Money. Okay, thank you.
Next speaker is Zarina.
I just want to say, yes, Brian, thank you so much, because the Archives, and I'm getting on affiliates because AC wants to be on Archives. Is really important as a former teacher and also a person who has a television show. For me, just being a history teacher, it's so important for people to understand what you're saying and the passion that you have for it, because I feel the same way. And let me just say that, again, all this bickering and all this other mess that's going on, to me, archives is most important, because it's this history of at least my people that you have been able to capture, and not just you, because they did the speeches before you were probably even born, some of them, and some of them are there as a result of being able, people sending them to you to say this needs to be cleaned up or this is what we had in our attic or our basement or whatever. And to understand that this mission that I'm looking at about Pacifica is about archives. And we are the only network that has such an entity as this and the affiliates. ABC, CNN, all of them have affiliates, but not like the kind of affiliates that we have, and they don't have the archives that we have. To say that you have three of Martin Luther King's speeches that nobody else has, I don't know if you all understand what that all means, but you just talk about and fuss. There's stuff going on all day and yesterday, but we are losing sight of the real purpose of Pacifica.
Thank you. Dave?
Thank you. Can I say one thing also? As far Don, when your question, it didn't sink in until just a second, and now that Zarina talked about the legacy, my dream or vision for the archive is to become an educational resource center. I believe that the archives should be made accessible to everybody so that it can be visited, not us go out and visit everybody else. I visited Hampton University in Hampton, Virginia, one of our affiliates that is an affiliate not because of Democracy Now! Or anything else, but because of the Pacifica Radio Archives. I was stood up by the general manager for our meeting, but in the meantime, while I was standing and waiting around, there were students there, and I had a pile of CDs to give. I was either going to walk out the door with my CDs and miss the meeting. Instead, I got into a dialogue with the students and handed them the CDs. And they were blown away by W.E.B. Du Bois and Fannie Lou Hamer and all that we know that we have. So I would say that I think that the archives is a place also to document the papers and the history of Pacifica. It was missed. When it was in 1971, when it was started, it was really started to take care of the tapes. There were tapes lying around and we needed to do something. But what we really do have to do, and what I recommend this board to do, is to help the archives become the place where the Pacifica papers and the history, written history, institutional memory, oral histories go. You know, was it Dorcas? Is that her name? Yes. We have tapes from WPFW that have been cataloged. And when she mentioned the other day of her morning reading theater, is that right, program? I have those tapes on a shelf. I've seen them. But this is the first time I met the producer. It's the first time I've had somebody to go to say, what was it, what did you do, and how was it done, who paid for it, whatever. So it's always a road of discovery of what we have, what we don't have, what we need. Also, Mr. Bob Fass has tapes that we know we need to acquisition, not to commodify Mr. Fass's work, but to document the legacy that he has brought to not only Pacifica, not only to radio, but the history of Mr. Fass's work in media. He's a legend, and this board doesn't have the impetus to help us get those tapes and take care of them. There's your answer. I have not 1 point, but 5 points.
Thank you.
I have a comment and a question. The comment is that the reason that we contacted Dr. Lessig and wanted to talk to him, and this is an answer partially to something Evan raised, what Lonnie has said, and what Mr. Howard said about the long-term vision, is I really believe that if we can come up with a licensing instrument that sets all producers free to seek their own distribution while making sure when it's done for benefit for someone, Pacifica gets a benefit, if we can found an open source media movement, that we can genuinely raise, not on the order of a million, we can do a fundraising campaign to ask for the $20 to $50 million that it'll take to restore the archives, build the infrastructure, and really be a leader again in a new kind of media as we once were. So I want to impose upon the board as much as possible to support efforts and the executives to support efforts to try and go forward, bring all the people necessary together to build the kind of licensing we need that can found that. I just want to remind people that the core of the open source software movement is the copyleft license. It's not appropriate entirely for our situation, but Dr. Lessig is such a person who can help us build it and is in contact with the kind of people who know about that movement and have the money to fund this kind of movement. The thing I want to ask is, I sat on the finance committee and we were presented with a budget. And I am, from what I'm hearing from you, that budget is wholly inadequate for what we need to do. And I don't want to put you on the spot in conflict with any supervisors, but whatever you could say about the budgeting process and what you need to see in the budgeting process so that those needs are reflected early enough to us in a way we can deal with it and address it would be very helpful. I will say that one of the things that happens in our drive, and I think it comes from you know, the financial hole we were in and the drive to get financially stabilized, is a kind of poverty consciousness that we don't have the money to do things. And we can be penny wise and really pound foolish. If the amounts of money we're talking about to make a critical difference at critical moments are not something that, you know, put us over the edge back into real threat and danger, you know, we should know about that. So sorry to take so much time, but if you could just comment on the budgeting process and why we were presented with a budget that was inadequate, if that's the case, that would be helpful.
I think the process wasn't really put together well. I mean, with Dan and Lonnie trying to do the budgets and the work that they were doing during the budget time, we really didn't have much time to discuss all that the budget really entails. In other words, I believe that the budget was, how do we keep our head just at water level? How do we just sort of float through the year? How can we get through this year? And it wasn't, the archives is the last resort or the last thing to deal with. But frankly, it was. Everything, so it, you know, I think it is this vote of being a committee that the task force brought to you, is that we can't be, I think somebody said the redheaded stepchild, which might actually, you know.
Funding from redheaded people.
That's a.
Right. Well, I was just going to say, I'm from Irish descent, and when I was born, the first thing my mother asked the doctor was not whether I was a boy or a girl, but whether I had red hair.
All right.
It's true.
Where?
So I think the archives needs to be lifted up. I think that what we've done in the past 5 years of identifying how important the archive is, you need to react to. Don't just be inspired by it. Do something about it. But don't take away from the rest of the foundation. I'm not asking for money to be taken away from affiliates or stations or committees of inclusion or anything else that the other agencies are, but we have to find a way. We have to find a way. I can't do it by myself, and neither can the other five people in the archive.
Last speaker is AC.
Yes, I want to congratulate you for the work that you've done at the archives, and thank you so much for the programming that I have been involved in directly with you, because I think we did a show on W.B. Du Bois and one on Paul Robeson, right, and some other people, and the tapes, a lot of people call for the tapes. I gave some to Howard, some to American University, some to the University of Maryland, and other works. So I know that they mean a lot to the general public, not to mention the friends who I've had to get in touch with you to get some more tapes to pass on to. So I'm happy to be on the committee with you, and I hope to see this project go forward.
All right.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
One second. Hold it. We're at time. And just one short question. Bob said about this big. So go ahead, Bob. Just
thanks. Great work, Brian, as always. I just wanted to ask you about the possibility or your past use of college interns or other connections with universities and people doing dissertations to supplement your energies.
We have worked with interns. One of the problems, one of the hurdles, is that we don't have a professional archivist on staff. I've been there for 7 years. We have never had a professional archivist on staff in the 7 years. That's a disaster. Mm-hmm. We cannot get interns when there's nobody with that discipline to help supervise that person. We have sort of worked something with Addie Gevins, who's our project coordinator through the grants. She gets to supervise the interns. So we actually do have an intern that's starting this as soon as I get back to do some work. And I'd say maybe three interns. But it's a difficult process because we don't have the requirements that the universities need.
Which is,
again, what we need. We need money to get an archivist on board so that we can get interns and expand and broaden our...
And just...
50 million.
Wait a minute. And absolutely the last comment from Ambrose, just a very short one.
And I'm glad you asked that question, because I asked that question of Brian when I was out there. And I know you hate to bring these kind of figures up, but Brian told me that they need $12 million. And get that through your heads. That's what we're talking about. That's the answer to your question.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, we have now Ursula Rudenberg, the Archives Director, and Pete Caracas. And then we are remarkably done with a very long day. Lynn, can I talk to you for a sec while this starts?